नमोतस्सा भगवतो आरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्सा नमोतस्सा भगवतो आरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्सा नमोतस्सा भगवतो आरहतो सम्मा संबुद्धस्सा बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। Anybody ever do this? Like, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to put my awareness on that tip of the nose and I'm not going to move it for an hour. It's not going to go anywhere. I'm going to do it. I'm going to concentrate. Often we have this, the instruction we're given or this idea of becoming concentrated or stopping the mind from thinking. We try this or we're instructed this. It's usually a quick lesson in not self, the fact that we actually don't have any real domain or control over the mind. But the suttas have examples, paraphrasing the spirit of the sutta. There's a sutta where Sariputta says that in the morning, if I want to abide with anicca, I spend all morning abiding in anicca. If I want to abide in Nibbana in the afternoon, I spend all afternoon abiding in Nibbana. Now, how is it that possible? Well, fundamentally, what I really want to kind of talk about is the approach of being more, maybe more passive in one's practice and stepping back and recognizing that the path to the cessation of suffering goes through suffering. You can't avoid it. You can't will it to be otherwise. You can't say, I'm going to be concentrated. These are actually the basis for why we're in the problem to begin with. So I'll use Anapana as it's a great framework. It's one of the most amazing suttas in the canon for many reasons. One, it starts off, the Buddha, I think it's during a It's during the Vasa, and so there's a 3-month, the rains retreat, and he gives a talk. And normally, after 3 months, the season's 4 months, but after the 3 months of the Vasa, it's normally for the monastics you are free from your Vasa commitment of staying in one monastery. And it says, we got, he lists, I think it's 9 of the great disciples are there: Sariputta, Mahamoggallana, Mahachunda, Kotika, Anuruddha, Ananda, I'm missing a few, but great disciples there. And he's like, everybody, there's all these new bhikkhus, and the teachers are teaching 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 bhikkhus, and things are going so well. I'm going to stay on another month. And people are excited by this. So, like, because the other bhikkhus in surrounding areas are like, the Buddha's staying on, and we're released from our vasa, we're all going to come together, and they continue to train diligently. And then after another month, he gives another talk, and he goes, this is great. All these great teachers, all these new monastics, and they're practicing, and all he goes through the wings of awakening. He goes through, like, some are practicing the Four Noble Truths, some are practicing the Seven Factors of Awakening, some are practicing the Adipadas, the strength, power, success, some are practicing the powers. And he also goes into the Brahmaviharas, some of Prajnanicca, and then some are practicing Anapanasati, and then bam, he goes into the Anapanasati. Which, sometimes people are like, Anapana, okay, well, that's great. Well, isn't there something more exciting? I'm watching the breath. Well, here you have a sutta where the Buddha is basically got the greatest disciples, one of the greatest gatherings of the monastic order, and he gives, Anapana as an instruction for you would figure all these guys had heard this before, like, oh, well, isn't there something new? Can we hear dependent origination or something, some deep philosophical thing? No, Anapana is what the Buddha teaches in this situation. So, what is maybe a different approach to, and what is the sutta say that I think is, maybe it's missed in some of the approaches. One of the things that I kind of, there's two kind of things that I rail against the Western the Western current state of affairs of practice is the idea of, like, you know, mindfulness and or developing samadhi. And then, you know, in the Anapanasati Sutta, after it goes through the Anapana basic instructions and then the four Satipatthana, you have the Bhujangas. And it's important when you look at the Bhujangas to recognize that, you know, you have mindfulness, investigation of dhammas, energy, piti, pasadi, samadhi, and upeka. And so, and each one of these cultivated, you know, samadhi's near the end there on that list. Now, it's none of these things are in any of the paths of development. Nothing is like, okay, you get all your sati filled up, and then you get all your dhammavicaya, your investigation of dhammas filled up. It's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen the animation of the Titanic when it sank. It's like, you know, they had the damage in the front end, and it started to go down, and then water got over the first bulkhead, and it started to fill in the second bulkhead, and then it got over the third bulkhead, and they all got filled up, but it was in a sloping way. So in the first two parts of the Bhujangas, you have mindfulness and investigation of dhammas, and this really is your kind of engine for your practice, staying aware and investigating dhammas. Now, dhammas, it's obviously one of the most complex words in Pali, truth, nature, it's often used for just like things. But I think one of my fellow monks, I don't know if he came up with it originally, but I find it to be a very useful word that kind of encompasses every subtle, every nuance in one word. That's pattern. So it's, you know, the teaching that the Buddha has is a Dhamma, and that's he's put together patterns that you can look at. You can look at things in terms of suffering. You can look at terms in terms of the Bhujangas. These are all separate patterns. The Khandhas is looking at it in terms of like various, the aggregates, how there's this certain kind of like similarity in certain things like feeling, perception, consciousness, or you can look at it on the sense base. And so there's different patterns and ways you can look at it. And how you should be really approaching Anapana, in my opinion, is sitting in an awareness that has a purpose, but allows the patterns of your mind to manifest. You let suffering arise, because, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, I remember very, very early on, like I would, my Goenka retreats way back 20 some years ago, you know, I'd hear people come up and they'd be like, oh, I saw this castle, and then there was these lights and this unicorn and all this craziness. And I'd be like, you know, I just was in excruciating pain for an hour. That's really all I saw. And I would really say, like, if I ever was doing the practice, if I was ever sitting for any kind of like joy or bliss, I would have quit a long time ago. Really, it is a lot of difficulty, but what you're doing is you're trading off, like, say, short-term discomfort and short-term inconvenience for a slowly, steadily, gradually improving state of well-being day in, day out. And that's why most people take it, or they don't recognize it, because they're looking for these immediate results. These immediate results is what is getting people in trouble to begin with. And the greater questions and answers discourse with Sariputta, he says, around the question of panya, discernment, and consciousness, he says that discernment needs to be developed and consciousness needs to be understood. And that discernment is defined as the Four Noble Truths. And so you actually have to develop this understanding of suffering and how you make it. And so in many ways, you have to let it manifest. But you need to give the mind something to do as a backdrop in order to allow this to occur. And you, if you just say, I'm going to focus on this one thing and I'm going to take it on, you're trying to be concentrated. You're trying to establish something. And what the Anapana Sati Sutta has in the first four sections is the contemplation or the awareness of the body, is just developing the mindfulness, and the third instruction is experiencing the whole body. So what I have found most useful in this regard, in terms of instead of trying to become concentrated, is you're trying to engage in that process of opening up your awareness. So this is that discernment is to develop, consciousness is to be understood. There's actually a practical means of doing it. Now, what is consciousness? Consciousness is this idea of divided knowing, like something is known separate from the rest of field of experience. So like say you can know that tip, that spot on the tip of your nose. You can know your hand. People generally, it takes a long time to kind of develop it. What you're trying to do is develop this full body awareness. And in order to do that, there needs to be a unification of the feeling and the experience. Because if you start moving, let's say, in the kind of Goenka idea of moving through, you're going to find solid parts, hard parts. You're going to have mental images of where the body is, where the body isn't. And you need to just keep going through and find. So this becomes a very active process of investigating where is the not open feeling occurring. Like, am I having a pain here? Am I having some kind of blind spot here? And trying to work your way to open these things up. Now, this becomes like your basic task that keeps your mind engaged. If you try to stay in one spot, the mind's going to rebel and kick something up. But even doing this, the mind still, you're going to be, you use anapana as an anchor for the fact that mental things are still going to arise. The mental, you know, hey, I want to get up and go watch TV or play some games, or, oh, I forgot I need to pull something out of the fridge for tomorrow's meal. So these, the hindrances fundamentally are what most people are really having to deal with in their practice day in and day out. And until you really get mastery over the hindrances, it really is the necessary step to really progressing on the path. And that's actually what you're seeing in that seven factors of awakening. You have the mindfulness, investigation of dhammas, and then coming after that is energy. And it's the hindrances that are actually preventing you from having the energy in the practice. And fundamentally, my position on this is that, like, the worst liar in your life is your own mind. And what we're often failing in recognizing is that the mind is kicking up these stories. The mind is kicking up this, I should do this, I can't do this, I want to do this, and all this stuff. And it's a paper tiger. This is a part of practice where you like, no, I'm going to just keep going. And then these thoughts, you realize, oh, well, that little story I told myself wasn't true. I didn't need to get up. Or that pain wasn't something that was going to stop me. Or if there's stories around the things going on in your life, you just gotta challenge them sometimes. Sometimes, like, you know, you do can use your cushion time to like say, is that really true? And challenge these, because this is like in the second factor or the second set, you have the stilling of the mental formations. And one of the ways you do this is not just believing the stories that your mind is telling you, and saying, okay, well, is that really true? And sometimes you might have to investigate that for a while or put it aside. But it needs to really become a much more proactive investigation, so that discernment needs to be developed. If you approach your practice as a technique, and that's so, again, this back to, I kind of lost the train on that, but the idea of what's, you know, I find kind of problematic with the Western approach to the practice is the idea that a technique, okay, I'm just going to do this and this is going to work. Well, that's like a brute force methodology. And fundamentally, you can maybe break through in a little bit, but all these other problems are going to happen that you're never going to really challenge unless you get more proactive in investigating the various suffering that is arising or may arise. And it also is really pointing at the kind of problem of wanting to become something as well. So in this position of just investigating, and now you do have this overriding goal of expanding your awareness to the full body, but it's not like what you are doing. What you're doing is just finding those places that are obstructions and allowing that to manifest, which will manifest by seeing the fabrications. Because this is the light of knowing is what dispels these stories and our fabrications. It's not the willing them away. It's not the brute force methodology. It's looking at them and seeing them and watching them pass, watching them no longer be. And then that's a Nietzsche. So that gets you into the fourth tetrad of the Anapanasati. But the structure of the Anapanasati, it parallels various levels of subtlety across the four satipatthana. So you have the body, the feelings, the mind, and the dhammas. And so at any given time, it's really good to familiarize yourself with all those possible ways of looking at the experience. But all of them are in the category of Anapanasati. And so the reason why the Buddha is saying that is because really it's quite possible to hold that awareness of the breath and investigate different qualities of the experience with that as an anchor. So it's not the idea of staying with a point, it's the idea of utilizing this anchor as a basis for allowing suffering to arise and then investigating, why is this, or can I endure this? Is this story true? And then this is how one develops insight into how the mind tricks one into making all the problems it creates. Because that is fundamentally the reason why Sariputta can sit there all afternoon long. Is because when we sit down and we say we want to do this, the habit pattern of our mind is like, yeah, I'd rather do something else. Those things don't arise for the arahant anymore. He doesn't have any like need for anything else. And so suffering is arising for us, which obstructs us. And this is on our morning chanting, bound by dukkha and obstructed by dukkha. Beautiful little saying. Fundamentally, we're trapped in dukkha and we can't see it because of the dukkha. But by using anapana and sitting with this subtle anchor and moving around waiting for suffering to manifest itself in one way, shape, or form, then we're like, oh, I see you, and then, okay, what am I going to do about this? And these are skills that need to be developed. This isn't really one of those things that is like a magic bullet. This is why techniques, I really don't think, will ever get you anywhere, because you aren't really developing the personal insight to what your own problems are. Been reading a good bit of psychology books and philosophy books lately, and one of them in particular is around how the schizophrenic personality is developed, which I had no idea. It's like it's in many ways a self-preservation strategy where one isolates an identity and creates a fake identity or a fake world to shield oneself. It's radically weird, and it's something that I cannot all relate to. But it points to the fact that every single person is in their own world, and they, their individual problems, they, you know, as monastics or other practitioners, kalyanamitta, we can help each other, but fundamentally we have to find our own triggers, our own obstructions, our own paper tigers. The mind is a paper tiger that, like, you just got to run through it. It growls at you, and you're like, paper tiger, rip you up. And then eventually you see it. That's all it is. It's something that has no meaning. It's just another fabrication that you've put in your own way. You've created that problem. It doesn't really inherently exist. So back to a little more of the practicality, though, with the anapana and the seven factors of awakening, there is this, unlike the paramis, which The Buddha didn't, I hate to break a wake-up call to the Western world, the Buddha did not teach paramis. It was not a teaching of the Buddha. And there's a real kind of reason for that. Paramis is this idea of perfection. It's, again, it's an idea of becoming. And I think it's one reason why it's very popular is because people like to become perfect, or they think they can become perfect. But the seven factors of awakening are, you know, they accord with a teaching of a Tathagata for that very reason of that they are unlike the paramis, where there's no causal relationship at all put forth in that teaching. The seven factors of awakening has this quality of like each of these things leads to the other. So you have the mindfulness, so you have to be present. It gives the investigation of dhammas, ability to see the patterns. Through seeing the patterns in the dhammas of the are like your things like your Four Noble Truths, suffering. This is suffering. Right now, there's no suffering. Hey, there's no suffering. I'm just going to keep scanning the body. I'm going to find any obstruction I can. And, I'm opening things up. Sometimes things are just going along smoothly, but then sometimes there's something comes up. So you have your investigation of dhammas and your hindrances. So these are all talks in and of themselves, but I'm trying to give you a general overview of a strategy of practice that you could go and utilize as a basis for investigating these other things. But then once you're like, you know, chewing away at the hindrances, you're just going to have more energy. So this more energy, this more available ability to apply oneself more consistently throughout the day, this will start to create periods of piti. And in the seven factors of awakening, you're actually lining up with the four jhanas as well. If you look at the first jhana, it's got piti, and then like the full body awareness is present. And then as you go through, you get to upekkha as the fourth jhana. And there's not a perfect matching up here, but it's certainly the. You'll see this when you look at the suttas of the Buddha. There's a holistic, like everything comes together in one way, shape, or form. There's this unbelievable cohesiveness to the teaching. And so the seven factors of awakening actually align up with the development of the mind through the jhana. And so you get your energy, gives you your piti, but piti's got a kind of coarseness to it. It's got a high to it that will often bring you down to like a, well, okay, where's the piti? And then when you kind of see the dukkha in that, so it's a subtle level of Dhamma awareness, then, you know, you get just into tranquility. And then this is what really, it gives you a stability that's where you really get concentration. Like Mahabhua's got the book that was heretical. Samadhi, or Panya brings about Samadhi. I don't remember the exact nature of the name, but it's Samadhi develops, or Panya develops Samadhi. So it's like, you do not make yourself concentrated. You do not stop yourself from thinking. These things just cease when you stop creating, or you just allow them to go away. Like if a thought arises, okay, there's a thought. If you don't engage in it, it'll just like be like a bird. It'll just go away. If you engage it and say, oh, what's this thought? And you like, you can either keep it going, you can keep working on that thought, like, oh, that's a really neat thought. I should start inventing this thing, or I should start worrying about this problem. Or you worry about why won't it go away? Well, you're just agitating the mind. But these are all, you know, you have to just allow the suffering to dissipate on its own. You can't become concentrated by like will of self. You have to stop fabricating those obstructions that get in the way of the still mind. Why is it not still? It's because you're constantly making things. If you stop making things, it'll be perfectly still. So, again, a little more on the anapana, some of the particulars. You have your, again, this also lines up with the jhanas and as well the seven factors of waking. But once you get through you get full body awareness, and then this, you know, stilling of bodily formation. So like the idea that, you know, you say you have a pain, this is a formation. This is a, and then like say your knee, I'm consciously aware of this knee pain. This is, you know, goes back to that statement of Sariputta, Discernment needs to develop. Consciousness needs to be understood. So you're conscious, you can be conscious of this because you've actually made it. But if you actually like use different strategies of for moving through it, you'll start to see that it's actually composed of things that aren't painful. They're like tingly, throbby, pulsy, cold, hot. And you'll be like, you know, if I really pay attention to that, there's really nothing in there that's pain. You've created a mind like, oh, I've experienced this kind of thing before, and it's always pain. Well, that's because every time you've experienced it before, you've made it and labeled it pain. But if you actually work through it and feel through it, it'll just start to be arising and passing away, amorphous stuff, and then eventually you'll be like, oh, it's gone away. And you just keep, you know, keep moving and keep working. Some strategies for other things about full body awareness is being very creative. Like if you're going up and down your arms, you can do like your awareness, move it around like paint strokes, or I sometimes like to go around in spirals, like choo 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 spirals. Or then you can develop, once you get some level of openness, you can go up and down arms and legs simultaneously. So this becomes more engaging to the mind. It's like a practice of trying to know and get this whole body open, but it's not static. So it's not as boring. It's not as like, oh well, I'm just trying to stay here with this one thing. You're actually much more engaged and trying to find problems, trying to find obstructions. Or what often happens is that once you kind of get this peace or kind of things are going good, the mind is going to manifest a problem for you. And often people are, they get bothered by that, but this is actually the fruit of practice. Suffering is often, I would say, you know, it's always the fruit of practice. Something is coming up because your mind is trying to fill a space. Like if you have an open feeling and a pleasant feeling, it's like, oh, okay, well, here, chew on that. Here's some suffering for you. And it's often trying to distract you from the work at hand when it comes to the practice. And so you deal with this, you look at this, and then you move on. The next set is feeling. So you got piti and sukha, the first two, and then experiencing the mind, the whole mind, and calming mental formations. So it's very analogous to the bodily part, but much more on the feeling, tactile sense, the idea of pleasant feelings, unpleasant feelings. And then the mind section, samadhi, and releasing the citta, or gladdening the mind and releasing the mind. And then the dhammas, you have anicca and vimokkha. There's the various factors of relinquishment and letting the mind go from all these fabrications. So at any given point, you're actually, you know, actually working on multiple things here. This is another thing in the series of questions and answers, is this idea that comes up whether or not things are conjoined or disjoined. And it's very important to recognize not to get involved in the minutiae of like, is this a perception, or is this a feeling, or is this consciousness, or is this anicca, or is... They're all related. They're all like... Again, dhammas are these various patterns and way of looking at them. And you can look at them with different angles. And depending on what angle you're looking at, you would label it, maybe could label it one way, but under a different angle, you would label it a different way. They're all just manifestations of phenomenon. So, you know, it's much more of a... The way I'm describing is giving yourself an anchor, recognizing that suffering is going to manifest. It has to manifest in order for you to recognize how you've made the suffering arise, or why it's arisen because of past karma, past patterns of thinking and doing. Like if you're always listening, this is one of mine, like always listening to music in the past. Well, I got decades of music that still come up. And so that's the karma. Or like, you know, my father was an inventor, and I really like to make things, so I'm always designing things in my mind. And that's just my past karma. But as suffering goes, those aren't so bad. I don't really have personally much to like problems with family that some I've seen many people deal with. But however your past karma is, you're giving it the space to manifest so that you can then deal with it. And there is no way around it. The path to the cessation of suffering goes through suffering. But recognize when it's also not suffering. Recognize when you're present with the body, you're experiencing it, and just lift that up occasionally. Right now, hey, there's no suffering. And if you do that, one of the things you'll recognize is that most of the time you're actually not suffering. But we tend to take these moments of suffering and we kind of say, well, that's what is the totality of my experience. But actually, suffering is actually a much smaller part of our lives, but we make it into a much bigger deal. And by lifting up more often the fact that you're not suffering and recognizing that neutrality or being comfortable with those periods will strengthen those periods, and you won't necessarily create as many problems for yourself. So I've actually covered probably a lot of ground here, and I don't really want to muddle it. And so maybe I'll leave it for some questions, but I'll end it there.